Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing? Taino T, Itabuk, Toca. How's everyone doing? ¿Cómo está? This is Sanacori right here, a.k.a. Taino Sagrado, straight out of Nahuake. This is Taino Radio con Nahuake. Radio Nahuake. I'd like to thank all you listeners right now who are live and listening. We have an amazing show, and thank you all you future listeners. Back to the Future is going to download this beautiful show. Thank you. Like if you would shout out once again to all those beautiful countries who are tuning in. And I just want to say, Jamaica, you're making a stand, Jamaica. You are really moving up in the ratings. But like always, Turtle Island, United States, Borinquen, second place. We got Canada, Jamaica, Dominican Republic, Quisqueya La Bella. That's right. You're moving up as well. All your European countries, thank you for tuning in. Believe it or not, there's a lot of Taínos in Russia. So that's it. Amazing. So listen, I'm very excited. This is going to be an incredible show. We're going to get, this is the DNA show that we've been doing weekly with my co-hostess from the mountains of Long Island. Her name is Inaburia, formerly known as Stephanie Sky. How you doing, Stephanie?
Hey, Sanacori. How you doing?
Yeah, you can tell I'm excited, right?
I see it. I'm excited, too. I won't deny it.
Well, the reason for my excitement is that we have the, you know, our DNO show is going to take a notch straight up. And because we have a super guest today. And I say super because you can't get anyone better when it comes to studying DNA and the indigenous Caribbean folk, okay? And our ancestors and modern Taino. And without further ado, I want to introduce the world, the Taino Radio and Nahuake Radio world from the mountains of Maryland. We have Dr. Miguel Villar. Are you on the air?
Yes, I'm right here. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here speaking with you on Taino Radio.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Villar.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's been a while. I guess 2018, Yare Melendez, Dr. Yare, she introduced me to you. And I believe Dr. Shear, I believe it's Shear, right? I think I'm pronouncing it right. And, yeah, so that was at the Taino exhibit in the Smithsonian Institute, American Indian Museum. So, thank you for saying yes, and this is so much needed, this DNA research. But tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into it.
Yes, I think it has been about 2.5 years since late 2018 that we met at a meeting of Taino heritage and Taino history in New York City. That was amazing. But I've been working on genetics in anthropology going now on 20 years, if you include the grad school time. And so I began working in the Caribbean in DNA probably towards my end of my grad school years. I was 2009, 2010, and then moved on to do a postdoctoral work in Pennsylvania with Dr. Shure, you mentioned earlier. He was my advisor. He also collaborated with me on a large project, a global project called Genographic. I began working with him. And then moved down to Washington, D.C. to run Genographic for the National Geographic Society. I did that for about 7 years until late 2020 when the project ended. But my specialty has been using DNA and using genetics to understand our past, understand our history at a global level, and I focus mostly in Latin America and especially the Caribbean. And I'm originally from Puerto Rico, from Borinquen, and wanting to work there was a passion I wanted to do throughout my 20s into my 30s, and I got a chance around 2009 to begin that work, and I've traveled back to the island at least 2 or 3 times every year for the past about 10 years to work with people there and publish papers about our ancestry through DNA. Worked in Dominican Republic as well, began some work in Cuba. That's a little more difficult. I worked in Mexico as well, and a few other countries of the Latin America. And yeah, it's been an exciting ride. I now find myself collaborating with very large groups, doing more work in the Caribbean on the DNA of living people, modern DNA we call it, and now on ancient DNA, which is DNA that we've extracted from skeletal remains that tell us a similar and sometimes a different story and sometimes a similar story about our history. So yeah, work in the Caribbean has been a passion of mine, a part of my field work that I feel really close to. And I'll be happy to talk about it with this audience for the next hour or so.
That is amazing.
That's amazing.
Stephanie, you had a question for Dr. Villar.
I did. Dr. Villar, I wanted to know, what made you want to start doing this kind of work? Like, what was the motivation and what was the end goal that you had in mind when you first decided this is what I wanted to do?
That is a great question. So I've always been a student of science, but I've never been one to sort of study animals too much. I was fascinated by people. I'm a people person. I love meeting people. I love talking to people. I love telling stories about people. And I find myself just in a field, anthropology, which is what my degree is, and where we can study and understand other people. But always being a science person, I gravitated to what we call a pretty hard science, a lab science in genetics. And this was what I was doing in grad school for many years. But I knew I always wanted to go back to Puerto Rico. I grew up there as a child in the late 70s and 80s. And, you know, when I was reading textbooks about history in Puerto Rico, it started with Cristóbal Colón y las Cuatro Carabelas, and we all learned about Spanish history. We always learned about the mother country of Spain, and then, of course, we are constantly told about the U.S., because we are part, the island is part of the, you know, the U.S. empire, in a sense. But I knew there was more to the island. I knew there was more to Caribbean history than just Spanish colonization and now a U.S. territory. And I remember my 8th grade graduation, the last year I was in Puerto Rico, that a man on a guitar started talking about Taíno ancestry on his guitar. And he said, you know, we've been told that there were people here before Columbus. We don't speak their language anymore, but they are still with us. They did not become extinct. And I remember 12 years old, that was an impression that man gave me on his guitar when he was playing a song about Taíno ancestry. And I had heard about, you know, I'd heard about the great time, and you study, you know, for about a week out of a whole year, you study Taíno history. The rest of it is for Spanish and American history. And I said, there has to be a lot more. So when I was in grad school studying anthropology and DNA, I said I needed to go back to Puerto Rico and begin doing this. And in 2009, I got the chance to do that. I took a semester off from grad school, went down there, and I ended up connecting with Jare, who we are going to talk about some more shortly, a great anthropologist who was doing amazing work there. And the rest has sort of been history. The rest has been, you know, working with DNA, uncovering our shared Taíno ancestry for peoples of the Caribbean, and then talking about it. Writing papers, but writing stories and telling stories that you know the history books have almost forgotten, and now DNA, with thanks to DNA, we can tell these stories once again.
Wow,
that's beautiful.
Amazing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And who
I
is
definitely
this?
Definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, now who is this elder that you said you when you were 12 years old? He was a guitar player, or he was a folk singer or something. Who was?
I don't remember his name. I was so young. This was
yeah, 80s, yeah, sure.
Late 80s. Uh-huh. But it was a man who was playing guitar at my eighth grade graduation. He was playing songs and was throwing in words in Arhuaco, in Taíno. And
wow.
And I just found it fascinating. And he just the one line I remember him saying that saying the Taínos are not extinct, are not a gone people because they all live inside us. And I was like, wow, that's an interesting way to think about it, because we're told about this indigenous group that used to be here, but we're singing in Spanish, for the most part, singing in Spanish, talking in Spanish. We look around and visit all the big Spanish, castles and Morro in different parts of Puerto Rico. And then, of course, you got all the American companies there. So you're bombarded as a kid by Spanish culture and American culture. But if you look for it, there's also Taíno culture throughout Puerto Rico. And that was that left an impression. Unfortunately, I cannot remember the man's name. This would have been late 80s.
Right.
It was hard to track down, unfortunately.
Yeah. But you know what's amazing? He planted a huge seed. Because that one song and that whatever he shared is led to your work, you know. It's amazing. And into Nahuake as well. Like, that is incredible. See, that's tradition right there. Wow. So, wait a second. We have a special guest, and she's well known in many sectors of Puerto Rico, Borinquen, Dominica Island, the Calinago. She's well known also in South America when she studied the Arawakan languages. She restored a language, our indigenous language in the Caribbean. And she was the co-hostess of Nahuake Radio from the mountains of Nahuake, Bayamón. I'd like to introduce to our listeners Tata Caroline Yare Melendez. I'd like to dedicate this song. It was written by the late Edwin Cedeño. Like Yare, he poured his heart out into the culture, Taíno culture, through music. So I want to dedicate this song to Yare and all the grandmothers who passed on and who are still with us, who have carried on this beautiful culture called Taíno. Take it away, Edwin, who's in Guave with Yare.
Atavera gua gua bibi gua uarababa. Atavera gua gua bibi gua guakiana guti. Atavera gua guasuimako. Atavera gua guasuimako.
that is the late, great Edwin Sedeno, who taught me the Mayowakan. Sedeno, I know you're with us in spirit. Also, Yare is in the studio in spirit. And Stephanie, she's very happy that you're taking her spot there. And this is new traditions that we're creating. I just wanted to take a few moments to address Nahuake in Spanish. Para todos nahuaqueños en Borinquen, te quiero decir muchas gracias por enseñarme mucho cómo es la comunidad en Nahuaque, como en Comerío, San Lorenzo, Espina, Yabucoa y todos los diferentes pueblos que yo visité con Yare Maléndez. Y yo voy a visitar pronto a Nahuaque. Nahuaque no está muerto, Nahuaque sigue todavía. Y siempre vamos a cargar este trabajo que la doctora Yare nos dejó. Nahuaque is not dead. Nahuaque will always rise to the occasion for self-sovereignty, for educating the youth through language and cultural events. Yare has left us a true legacy, has left us a blueprint, actually, how to maintain an indigenous community. So I'm very proud to be a Nahuaqueño here in New York City. And we're making a lot of moves. And Stephanie, you're involved in that movement here in New York City. And I can't wait to reconnect. Yeah, I can't wait to reconnect with the people. So please, Dr. Valar, take us back to that time period that you was in Nahuaque. Please, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much. And that was a beautiful song. Thank you for playing that in memory of Dr. Yare Melendez. Dr. Yare Melendez, yes, was instrumental in all we're talking about. Amazing woman, amazing anthropologist. So I met her in 2009. I was taking a semester on the island away from graduate school and wanted to shift my work in genetic anthropology and DNA to work on the island. And I connected with her. We both actually shared the same a PhD alma mater. We both had gotten our doctorates at State University of New York at Binghamton University. And so I emailed her and I reached out to her, and she, you know, reached out immediately with a big email hug. If you can imagine how excited she was to hear from me as a fellow anthropologist looking to go to Borinquen to begin doing work on DNA, and she told me all about her project. So I joined her the second half of 2009, and we began working. She had just begun establishing Nahuaque. She started in the south, the southeastern region of Puerto Rico, Yabucoa, Humacao region, Las Piedras, Maunabo. And then she expanded to many other of the municipalities after that. But we began by meeting people in the community. And I sort of explained what I was doing. And she sort of really took me in. She helped me, talk to people, get to know other communities, and explain to them that we are, you know, taking DNA samples to sort of understand the hidden stories in our DNA. We know that Puerto Rico and the people of the island are of mixed ancestry, but how is that so? And we actually went specifically to communities where some words in Arhuaco, they spoke some, they practiced some customs, and she took me to meet abuelas, the grandmothers. I remember meeting a woman in her 90s who took me in, sat me down, fed me, and we had to, you know, take a break, clean our mouth before we took a DNA swab after that. But it was amazing. It was very warm. And she would teach her classes, and she would give me, 5 or 10 minutes of the class time to speak to the parents. We were not taking DNA samples from children. We really wanted to make sure we had informed consent of adults. But that first season in the fall, we worked with about 200 individuals. And then I came back a few times in 2010 and in 2011, and we expanded it to nearly 500 people. We actually also went to a couple government leaders in San Juan, and we were trying to motivate them. We would give them DNA kits, and they would participate. So it was a scientific project, but it's also community outreach. When I returned in 2011, I already had some preliminary results, and then I went back a couple more times. and gave presentations in front of, well, actually on television. We gave presentations on the radio on the island, and met some leaders and returned their results to them. The DNA results told them about their in many cases Taino ancestry that they did not know about. And we were thinking, by saying that we could open their eyes and open their mind to help this effort that she was leading, that Dr. Jaray Melendez was leading so well, starting in, you know, different parts of the island, but now was looking for recognition, working with the government of Puerto Rico, and then eventually she started coming to the United States. Now we're talking by 2014, 2015, and she had gotten some recognition and support from people here in the United States, and was, you know, gathering more funds and gathering more resources to travel to South America, like you said, and just connecting with groups in Venezuela and other countries in South America. After a while, I lost touch with her, 2016, 17, but I was able to reconnect with her in 2018, like you said, that magnificent event we had in New York City now about 2.5 years ago. But we published many papers together. We wrote about it online. National Geographic gave me a blog, and I wrote 2014 and 2015, wrote a blog about a Taino DNA, and introduced her to other people, and the project did quite well. Like I said, I began to work in Dominican Republic as well to expand outside of Puerto Rico. I even traveled in 2017, took a trip to Cuba, because this is sort of the heritage shared across the Greater Antilles.
That's
my home
great.
Was Puerto Rico, but we were looking to other places as well to show the connection that existed there, and that you know, maybe began to break down in historic times with Spanish colonization, and then you know, modern politics has kind of shaken the Caribbean in different ways. But we knew if we were looking at the DNA of our ancestors there, then we could be finding connections across all of the Greater Antilles and even across the Caribbean. So it was an amazing, amazing time to work with her, and an amazing time to be doing this work.
Hold on, that's super exciting, and I can't wait to hear the results. What did you tell the people? What was shared? And their reaction to that too. So what was the conclusion? Wait. First of all, let me just say one thing. I think the hardest thing you must have done that time period, it was trying to wash out the benin from your teeth before the test, right?
that was always difficult, because I enjoyed so much the comida, the food from Puerto Rico is fantastic. And when I traveled with Dr. Melendez from town to town, we would, you know, stop and get food on the side of the road, and that's the best stuff that you buy from the vendors on the side of the road there in different towns in Puerto Rico on the island.
Oh my God! Yes, yes, you're right.
But what the results? The results are fascinating, and actually the project has grown. Other people have began doing similar work and expanded into other, like I said, other islands as well as other methods. But the biggest thing that we found out of the project that we began in 2009, 2010 was that a couple of things. We started in the southeastern region of the island, and other people had published a few papers, very what we call low resolution, a few DNA markers in the western side. There was a professor based at the University of Puerto Rico, Mayagüez, who did some work. He's become a good friend of mine. He did work on the western side of the island. So we were trying to see if this was this ancestry that we knew existed was actually throughout the island. And sure enough, we found it. And we found some strong signal of it in the southeastern part of Puerto Rico. But we also found that the Puerto Ricans do also have European ancestry, there's African ancestry, and it's mixed in different ways. But one of the most interesting aspects that we found was the amount of Taino DNA is very, very high from the maternal side, what we call mitochondrial DNA, what's inherited strictly from our abuelas, what's coming down the maternal side. And in Puerto Rico, it's over 60% coming down. Pre-Columbian, it's Taino, it's coming unmixed through the maternal line. And that's about two-thirds of the maternal lines are certain haplogroups, or certain branches of or certain clans, we call them, that trace back thousands of years to these islands. So when people say that they feel connection to this ancestry, it is true. It's real. It exists. Specifically, it exists the strongest through the maternal side. I can sort of go deeper if you'd like.
Yes, please. But okay. I got a quick question. You said through the maternal line, unmixed. You said unmixed, 60% above 60% unmixed. Does that
right.
mean that
right. so we,
okay?
So let me explain a little bit. That's a good question. So when I say unmixed, it means that there's parts of the DNA that we inherit only from our mothers,
right?
And there's parts of the DNA that we inherit only from our fathers. But 99% of the DNA comes mixed from both, but there's tiny bits. And so what's happened in Puerto Rico and what we notice in part of Latin America is that the part that's mixed, the part that's coming from both parents, and it comes as a mix from all four of your abuelos and abuelas, from all your grandparents and the tatarabuelos and everybody before you, that part is the one that's mixed European, African, and Taino, mixed in different proportions and different ways. However,
okay.
the one that comes purely from the mother, so it comes from our madres and our abuelas and our bisabuelas, tatarabuelas, tataratatarabuelas, the one that comes without any male influence, really, it comes down strictly from the mother. That is across the whole island, upwards of 60% Taino. There is about 25%
wow.
African and about 10 to 15% European. So it is there, and it's a very high percentage. And on the island of Puerto Rico, it's the highest than anywhere else in the Caribbean. That's another interesting.
Interesting.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's huge. 60% over 60. That's huge. Uh-huh.
Yeah. One thing we discovered that is actually somewhat sad, but surprising as well. When you look at the paternal side, the father side, from our fathers and our abuelos and directly without mixing, again, not the stuff that's mixed with mom and dad and then grandma and all the grandpas, the stuff that came strictly, only men carry it, and it comes strictly from the father and the father's father and the father's father and father's father. It's part of the DNA on the Y chromosome. It's part of the DNA that makes men, that the women don't have this chromosome, only men have the Y chromosome. This one came out to be 85% European. And then about 13 to 14% African. And in my studies, I found about 0%. Actually, I found nothing that was Taino coming down the male side. A co-worker of mine has found, a colleague of mine has found actually in one or two cases of a Y chromosome in living, people living on the island that carry this Taino signal. But it's very, very small. So that signals to me that the mix was on the island, but you see this throughout the Caribbean, it was very uneven. It was European men coming and marrying and mixing with Taino women, and this would happen over and over again over the course of history. So that signals to me something something that, again, our history books haven't told us, and has created an unbalance, in the DNA, but it has not, it does not erase this very strong signal, an incredibly strong signal that we threw from the mother's side back to the Taino. But it was the difference between the two that was quite astonishing.
That is, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's also. It makes you think what was happening with the Spanish when they came over to to the island.
What happened?
400, 500 years ago, it was something that we don't want to think about too much, but it's something that happened in colonial places all over the world, and that's a legacy in a sense of many Latinos, and it's very sharp. That legacy is quite sharp and distinct in Caribbean islands. However, the studying the mitochondrial DNA was actually the most interesting part. This one, it was over 60%, and we discovered certain branches or haplogroups, we call them, very common on the island, and people who have taken a DNA test may recognize that the haplogroups A2, haplogroup C1, these are the two most common haplogroups, and these are Taino haplogroups that we see, or at least they're not European. They're coming. They've been there for, we think, hundreds and not thousands of years. There's also some D and some other branches of C1 as well, and I believe B as well. So that is true. Those lineages can trace directly back to groups in South America, in many cases tracing back to Arawakan speaking groups that are still living in different parts of Venezuela, Brazil, and the Guyana today. So that part is clear from the DNA, and it really can show a direct tie to that we knew from prehistory. We knew from archaeology that there was most likely an Arawakan group living there that we call Taino now. And these haplogroups that we find coming down the maternal side are signals of that connection to those groups. And they still exist above 60% on the island. So that was quite amazing.
Did you find any of the women in Nahuacan, the study, that had like higher than 60% like DNA, like I mean 70-80% of the maternal? Did you?
Well, so the interesting part is that this number I told you, 60%, that's not
okay.
Any individual person. That's actually that's the conglomerate. That's everybody put together. What we did find in some of them, yes, when you look at their DNA percentage-wise, so the DNA that you get the results, say, from Ancestry DNA, from 23andMe, they'll give you a percentage, right? They'll tell you that you carry, you know, 40% European, 40% indigenous, you know, 30% sub-Saharan African. Those numbers are coming both from the mother and the father. Those are the mixed numbers.
Okay.
So that 60%, that 60% refers to everybody together make up 60% of every 60% of that group of the 500 people that we sampled. 60% of them had either A, B, C, or D, the major haplogroups that we find in the indigenous Americas.
Interesting. Wow. So I know Yare used to tell me that this is funny. I don't know if you remember this, but she said a lot of the mayors that took the DNA test were kind of skeptical about, you know, that they were indigenous, you know, heritage. And they came out with the B haplogroup, B, which is, I guess, is Incan, right, from the Andean mountains. I don't know if you remember that, but she – huh?
Yeah, that is interesting. So that's interesting. She told me something about that. Haplogroup B is one of the four major ones that we identify as pre-Columbian, at least, or they could be Taino, or they could be Arcaico. They could signal a different, but they're definitely they're not European and they're not African. The A, B, C, D, and the B does have connections to the Andes Mountains. That's absolutely right. And there's one B2 that we find. I want to say maybe 4 or 5% of the people on the island, and it's interesting that would show up primarily in some political parties or political people.
It's true. Right?
Go ahead.
No, because she used to say that out of all the indigenous nations, she felt like the Incan nations, you know, they were very organized or very, you know, very political. So her theory was like, of course the mayors will be B, you know what I mean? because of their politics.
So. That's interesting. The two major ones, the two most common ones, are the A2 and the C1, and those we see about 20% for C1 and about 40%, but it varies somewhere between, you know, 20% and 40% for both of them.
Right.
In C1, we do see a direct connection to northern South America. There's one branch, C1B, that ties very closely with what we think is a migration of the Taínos that came possibly up the islands of the Lesser Antilles onto the island.
All right.
And then actually we've done since then, I've been part of a group that has actually been able to obtain DNA from skeletal remains. And we actually can see these same ones. We see these A2s and C1s showing up at different time periods, not just in Puerto Rico, but in Hispaniola and the Dominican Republic, Haiti, Cuba, the Bahamas. We see them come up at different time periods. So now with this kind of information, looking at skeletal remains that some of them are 2,000 years old, some of them are just 500 years old, we
right.
can actually see which migrations came at what moment and possibly even from where.
That's, wait a second. So, Stephanie, you hear that? Okay, now the wheels are turning right now. Well, you know, Yare and I, we always used to argue because she used to take me to the towns, right, in Awake, and she'll say, oh, this town is full of A's. Oh, this town is full of C's, you know. So I used to say, well, why are they separate? Why isn't it A, C, A, C, A, B, you know? And she said, oh, well, it's all Taíno. I says, yeah, but why the A's are here? Why the C's are here? Can you explain that? Because I still don't get that.
That's a good point. So I think the patterns that she was seeing may have been true, may not, but I think when you look at families, when you look at sort of groups of people that live together, they may have a maternal connection. They may have the same abuela or bisabuela or something, or there may be a group of women who have settled in those villages, and a lot of people are related. So if you're related to other people there, then there's a better chance that you share the same lineage, whether C1 or A2.
Okay.
But the interesting part is on the island, it's so well interconnected. There's highways everywhere. People now travel all over. You can travel from one side of the island to the other, and nowadays, and you know, in a couple hours and stuff like that. So people have been moving a lot. If we had a time machine and we could go back in time to the 1400s or even sooner, I think if you may be able to see more clearly this part of the island is A2 and this other part of the island is C1. What she was talking about maybe are just sort of family, clans, the groups of related people that would share
right.
one. But people, I mean, people, at least since we've been able to move around the island so quickly in the last almost century or so, but at least in the last half a century when we built highways and can go across the island so quickly, people have been moving pretty fast and mixing even more.
Wow. Now when I Google, that's another thing I used to do with Yare, I'll Google A2 haplogroup, and I'll get Mexico, I'll get Central America, I'll get some Amazonian tribes from the Andes, but nothing from like Venezuela, Colombia, you know, what we see as the Arawak. So are the A2s Taíno, or is from South America, Arawak, or is it
that's
Mayan, you know?
That's a very good question. So,
right.
That I thought that the connection would be stronger to Central America, whether it's Mexico, whether it's Mayan, because you're absolutely right. You get a lot higher frequency of A2. You do have a few, and so we've been able to discover what we call sort of different branches inside of A2. So we have A2K, A2Z. A2D, all of these show up in different parts of Central and South America. So there's one very unique one that we found on the island of Puerto Rico, A2Z, with a Z at the end. That one doesn't have any connection to South America, but it doesn't have any connection to the Yucatan or Central America anywhere either. So we've actually, looking at ancient DNA, we've seen it in Cuba, and we've seen it in Hispaniola. But in Puerto Rico, it's very common. And that one seems to me to be something very old and very common throughout the Greater Antilles. You don't see it in the Lesser Antilles. You don't see it in the Bahamas. And honestly, I don't know if it's been reported on Jamaica.
Interesting.
But it could be Jamaica. However, you're absolutely right. The C1 we've been able to pinpoint almost directly C1B, and then even that one, C1B2 and C1B4. You keep on adding more letters and numbers at the end when you get more and more specific. C1B2 and C1B4 are very common on the island of Puerto Rico, and they have direct connections to not just to Venezuela in the Orinoco Valley, the northern part of South America, but they actually, the timing of their arrival is very similar to what we think would have been the Arawakan group. So C1B has been suggested as a close connection to that migration that brought Taino, brought ceramics to the island, and brought Arawakan language. But I suspect there's some A's as well, A2s, A2K, and we may discover that A2Z as well ties down there. So the fact is that that represents one group or a small group of maybe related women that
right.
made up the
right.
island, and then all the descendants came from there. But I think in reality, Taino was the dominant culture at the moment, and therefore these A2s and C1s should all be considered Taino nowadays.
Okay. Well, that answers that question. I know Yare used to tell me this, but I always used to argue, but wait a minute, hold on. Google tells me it's Mayan. So it's
yeah.
like, well, I got a quick, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, continue.
No, I think we have to think about it also as culture, right? You may have a deep ancestry connecting somewhere, but you become part of a culture that you exist in. And the Taino was a culture that transcended the island and was quite active, ceramic users and in many cases they were moving across the islands and in large numbers too, and they would have sort of included the A2s and the C1s to our best interpretation of it. So I think there's no reason to think that one is one and the other is not. So.
Okay. So you mentioned, you know, I read these articles and wow, they were talking about the ancient DNA. In your research, did you match the ancient DNA with modern DNA? Was there strong connections between
yes.
the ancient
yes,
and the
absolutely.
Modern, please share.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So 2020, two large labs. I was able to collaborate on a second one with a large group of collaborators. We published first one group published over the summer, and the other one published towards December. Two papers that looked at ancient DNA. I mentioned earlier this is DNA that is collected from remains,
okay.
remains, and this is done with working closely with the communities there. This is not done in any way and it's done minimally. This damage any part of the skeleton. They're treated with utmost respect. I want to make sure people understood that. But what we saw is that some of the same haplogroups that we see in modern people were there in the ancient peoples as well. And so one thing that came up in those papers was that not just basing it on living people, we can actually have concrete evidence that these people that were there have left descendants, and the people living across these islands are descendants from these people that were there. So now we have the concrete way to tie and it's through these haplogroups are one of the best ways to tie it. We see C1 in the ancient. We see A2 in the ancient DNA, and we see it in modern DNA. So we can prove the direct connection between the people that were there because we're looking at their remains and the people that are living on the island today.
So, wow, that's very exciting news. So those ancestors, those ancient ones, we're carrying your DNA, the Boricuas or Quisqueyanos, whatever. We're carrying that DNA in us, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's sort of been now we have what we say concrete evidence of that, and you know I would like to see an effort to go back to those history books that we were taught in elementary school and say, you know,
right.
There was a culture, a very active, vivid culture that was on these islands, and it was not erased. it just ended up being mixed and mixed with those people that came later in different ways. And
right.
And I think DNA can help us do that, help rewrite these history books.
That is so super cool. I know a lot of the northern tribes don't really use DNA, but here in the Caribbean, we've been, you know, a lot of people have been buying the kits, and it's been like blowing us away how people, for example, Stephanie, you know, Inaru Boria, we became friends last September 2019. Through Jet Match, we found out we're cousins. So and almost every friend that I know that from the Taino movement, whatever, we're relatives, you know, through DNA. And when we look at those markers,
super DNA.
so I'm just like, this is incredible, and it's those ancestors, right? Do you think that, Dr. Villar, that these relationships, these connections through DNA, relatives, it's that indigenous, those grandmas, right, that's connecting us all?
Yeah, I think so. I think we have our grandmothers to thank for this, and I think there's many other things, some of the food, some of the words, some of the customs that we see on the islands, and I know from Puerto Rico for sure. We thank our grandmothers. But yeah, I think it's amazing. Nowadays, we're doing, when I started doing this back in the 2000s, we were doing a few hundred points of DNA. Now we're doing millions. And when we do millions of points of DNA, we can do exactly what you just said. We can compare to one another and see if we share common ancestors, see how close of cousins we are. And in some cases, you'll find that you have a lot of second, third, or maybe even fourth or fifth cousins. I've taken various DNA tests and I find various people that match my DNA that I haven't met, but I would say about half of them are coming from the island, from Puerto Rico. It's mostly through that maternal side that we can share that strong tie back to the island and back to our ancestors.
That's super. That is super, super. I just got one of my cousins, my DNA cousins. That's what we call each other, DNA cousins. Donated Ancestry.com kit for me. I usually go through 23andMe, but I recently called 23andMe and I was super upset with them because of the language they use on the website, And I've been arguing with them. I should get a higher percentage of indigenous, you know, because my whole argument is here I am. My mom's A2, actually, A2. So So 23andMe gives you this timeline, and it seems like the Spaniard crossed my DNA around the 1800s. So that's 18. So that's like 200 and something years. Compared to an A2 haplogroup, which is like thousands of years, like why can't I get a higher? Why is the Spanish higher, and why is my DNA indigenous lower? Drives me crazy. Maybe I'm not getting it, but
I think when they try to tell you, you know, at what point in time your ancestry would have come in, it's a difficult thing to estimate. So I think. What we need to start to figure out is there is obviously a lot of people that came from mostly from Spain to the island during colonization and mixed mostly with the women. There were men mostly coming, mixing with women that were there. And some of them came very early on in the, you know, late 14, early 1500s, and some came later. I think the DNA may not be able to give you that estimate correctly. However, when it tells you that you might have, you know, 50 or 60% coming from Europe, it's probably looking at several different migratory events that could have been a, you know, great, 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 great grandfather at one point, and then somebody several generations before that came in. And it's difficult because if you think of the fact that every generation you have double the number of ancestors. You have two parents, four grandparents, eight great-grandparents, 16 great-great-grandparents. So by the time you get to the 1800s or 1700s or something like that, you would have had so many ancestors that the amount of Europeans coming in may have began to swamp or to dilute, in a sense, the Taino, because the Taino was there, but there were no new ones coming in. It was sort of what was dealt from your ancestry. So it's kind of hard to explain. We are kind of like, I'm trying to say our maternal line is there, but it could have been moments of been diluted by new migrations coming from Europe or new things that were happening at different times. But the fact that has survived, and it survived in some people, it survives in significant numbers. I think you were asking me if any of these abuelas had a higher percentage.
Right.
And some of them, I think, were definitely higher than typically most Puerto Ricans will have, about 15% when you look at all the DNA coming from pre-Taino or pre-Columbian ancestry. And some people, that's higher, 20, 30%. And the further you go back in time, the older the person, you may have the higher percentage. But the problem is that we are now removed by 500 years, and it's become, unfortunately, more and more diluted over that time.
So it's the dilute. Yeah. Okay. Dilute. Okay. I get that. I guess I don't want to see it. You know. Wow. But Stephanie, do you have any questions for Dr. Villar?
I do, actually, Dr. Villar. I have a few questions for you, actually. My first question is, with the newly accessible opportunities that we have with this DNA testing, right, with 23andMe, Living DNA, Ancestry.com, and having people readily available to test their DNA, right? A lot of people are doing it to better understand themselves, better understand their health. Personally, what's your opinion? Because we've had a few shows in the past where we speak about Ancestry DNA and 23andMe aiding in the resurgence of Taino identity in general. And we speak about paper genocide and the issues that we're starting to have to reevaluate when it comes down to trying to relocate where we come from, as far as ancestry goes. What's your opinion on so many people having access to being able to test their DNA and get this information, aside from it creating these huge genetic pools that allow us to possibly find different, not only migration patterns, but essentially being able to almost rewrite history in some aspects. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it's amazing that we are able to do this now, but I think we need to do it, I think, maybe cautiously at time, and educate yourself as well. Every company that you do it with will have to consent. You have to give them permission. So I would encourage people to sort of read and make sure that you're doing it with a company that you feel comfortable giving them access to your information. At any moment, you have the authority to say, I want you to destroy my DNA. I want you to throw away my little tube of DNA and destroy my results off it. So I think it's important that people know that you have control over this. And it's your imperative to if you're concerned about this, to communicate with the company and say, please sort of destroy or get rid of my information. And I when I ran the Genographic Project for National Geographic, I had to do that several times.
Okay.
However, I think we're also living in a world that people are so comfortable sharing information and social media that we have sort of a new generation of people who will get the DNA result and they want to share it with the world immediately.
yeah.
And I think that's sort of fantastic that people are excited about this. And if people sort of can understand that there are some health implications, and especially when you get to the bigger and bigger tests where they're testing millions and millions of points of data, there is a chance that you may discover something medical. So be ready to sort of learn something that you weren't necessarily expecting when it came to something medical. When it comes to ancestry, there's people who are discovering things that they were not aware of. And in some people, that's been upsetting. But the most people actually are so excited to learn about their ancestry, especially like people who maybe are adopted, or people who never met their father. They knew their mother, but not their father, or something like that. There's a lot of people whose experience is like that. And now, thanks to DNA, they've been able to connect with people. So it's exciting in many ways, but we are going fairly quickly down a road where it's so much data and the stuff that can be discovered, people who take tests to make sure that they're reading the fine print on it, and they are aware that at any moment, if they don't feel comfortable, they can ask the company to cancel to throw away the test tube and delete the data, and not use it for any medical or any scientific purposes. It's your right to do that. The DNA belongs to you. But I think
thank you.
We're going to be navigating this for decades to come, and we're going to have to learn with mistakes, and hopefully the mistakes will be few, and the amazing things we learn will be many. I hope.
Absolutely. I definitely agree, and that is something that's very important. So we do want our listeners to know that you do have full disclosure to your DNA. That is your, your personal property. So make sure that any time that you do take these tests, that you do read the fine print associated with everything. Dr.
Yep.
Villar, we've also done some shows in the past where we've broken down DNA. In regards to SNPs and CMs and centimorgans, where we have gone through GEDmatch and compared modern DNA to archaic DNA that we have, GEDmatch kits to. So I know that when it comes to usually evaluating archaic DNA versus or alongside modern DNA, usually they like to keep their readings around 7 cm to consider it a viable match.
Right.
And I have done online live comparisons with archaic DNA, and there's actually a few Facebook groups and GEDmatch groups that are trying to link Taino DNA and Taino lineage to Alukayan specimen that was found in, I believe it was the Bahamas, saying that was the first Taino woman. And at bare minimum, you have to match at least 3 cm, which, we know from what we've discussed previously that a viable match is usually 7 or higher. What's your personal opinion and your professional opinion on people who do take their raw DNA, upload it to websites like GEDmatch to try and see how or if they're related to these archaic DNA specimens? Is it something that is more fantastical, more so, unlikely, or is it viable? Mm-hmm. Is it a viable thing to be doing and really putting energy into to try and say, look, I am related to this specimen from Siberia from 20,000 years ago, or to Clovis, because a lot of us that do have indigenous history and lineage, we use Clovis and we use the Kennewick man to kind of see where we're matching. For the people who don't have
right.
their haplogroups, they like to use GEDmatch for those things. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think this field about comparing, modern DNA to ancient DNA using the centimorgan scale that you were talking about, that's something relatively new. But so the two papers that were published this past year, 2020, are going to increase the number of quote-unquote Taino genomes from ancient DNA from, like you mentioned one woman in Bahamas, right? That was in 2017-18. And then there was, since then, 250 new ones have been published, somewhere in that ballpark. So there's a lot more samples to compare now than just the one from the Bahamas. So I can see this happening a lot more now. There is a difficulty using the Senti-Morgan scale when you're talking of things that are thousands of years apart, for sure, but maybe even 500 years. So when we're matching some of these ancient or archaic DNAs, like you said, with modern DNA, you're talking about a time difference at least 500 years, but in some cases it's 1,000 years or more. And at that point, I think the Senti-Morgan scale doesn't really work. The difference would have been much, much smaller than the 7 or the 2 that you were referring to. Because you did, the distance between the people would be dozens and dozens of generations. The Senti-Morgan scale works when you're talking maybe at 5, 6, and at most 7 or 8 cousins. So that's already 200 or 300 years.
So I think pushing it.
Yeah, so I think people could try. I don't want people to do it and they don't get a Senti-Morgan match with the ancient DNA and they get very disappointed, because you're talking about a time scale that is so huge, 500 or 1,000 years, that this sort of this cousin DNA cousin matching, like you said, the DNA cousin, doesn't work as well in the long time frames. But it doesn't mean that it can't find a match. And I would encourage people who want to try all these new ancient DNAs that were published in 2020. They're now available online. So maybe some of them may already be on GEDmatch. Some of them are on publicly accessible databases, but they're out there already. So I encourage people who want to try, but if it doesn't match, I would don't call it a dead end. Don't call it a closed door, because there's always the Y chromosome to match. In many cases, that's difficult in the Caribbean, but certainly the mitochondrial DNA is another way to match going through thousands of years. I think when you talk about connections to Siberia, Kennewick Man, then we're talking, 9,000, 10,000, or even 20,000 years. And it'd be almost impossible to find any kind of Senti-Morgan connection at that level. So DNA splits and recombines over and over every generation. So the little pieces that we measure with Senti-Morgans, the pieces of continuous DNA that we share between cousins, it's almost disappears when you go into the thousands of years. But there'll be new techniques. I know some people who are coming up with new techniques that are really good to compare ancient and modern DNA. We tried when we published this paper in December 2020, the large group that published on the Caribbean ancient DNA. We tried this example, and we actually did find connections, not with modern people, but we compared some of the ancients from Hispaniola to some of the ancients from the Bahamas or ancients from Puerto Rico. And we actually were able to make a few matches, distant cousins, 6th, 7th cousins, among these couple hundred samples that from which we got the ancient DNA. So the technology is getting there to improve. And I think within a few years, we'll be able to use the technique more.
That's just great. Dr. Villar, I just got a text from Spooky Lou. He's our paranormal expert. We have a paranormal show on Mondays. And there's a conspiracy that's been going on for a while since these companies came out. And I need to ask this. It's kind of controversial, but let's see your opinion on this. 23andMe, when they do their breakdowns or percentages, there's always like this percentage. And I see a lot of indigenous people, that take the DNA, is there's always a certain percentage, sometimes as high as 30%, that's uncertain. They don't know what it is. So there's this conspiracy theory that is like, extraterrestrial or star people DNA. And have you heard of that that conspiracy theory or whatever you want to call it? Why can these companies figure it out and they put uncertain?
Yeah.
What is uncertain mean? You know.
I think uncertain. I mean, they're guessing in some cases. They can make a really good educated guess.
Okay.
But when they say uncertain, it's because they can't really guess. Sometimes it depends on they don't have enough people on their database to compare, or they don't have enough reference populations from the database to be able to tell you something more specific. I think the idea that it could have come from a different sort of planet, I think that would be much more difficult scientifically to prove, because
right.
You would need the same chromosomes, you would need the same, you know, egg and sperm to come together at the same type of DNA to align. All these things
right.
are very difficult to explain if you're saying it came from another
yeah.
species, extraterrestrial or something. But it could be coming from a group that we just don't have enough information from.
That's it.
But that's it. That said, they could estimate. So maybe they could tell you with, you know, a 40% certainty as opposed to a 90% certainty, but they're not willing mm-hmm. to do that because they're not willing to be wrong. So that could be why they're feeling uncertain, because they don't feel comfortable. They don't feel confident enough. They don't feel comfortable enough to give you an estimate. I don't know. Different companies have different algorithms, different programs they mm-hmm. use to calculate this. So you could take a test with one company and you get one result, and you get take another company. You know, you should get theoretically the same result, but you could get something close to it. If you get something completely different, then I would raise a, you know, call them up and I would raise a flag. Somebody made a mistake. But if you get something that's slightly different, that's probably okay. It's just, it depends on the program they had. But some companies may have a better reference population and be able to tell you something better when the first company just tested as uncertain. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're able to take a different test, if somebody's is giving you a huge percentage of uncertain, or send them an email and say, can you run it through your database one more time and see if it gets better or something? I don't know. Some companies are able to
right.
to take your DNA results and they run them through their software once again, and maybe the results get better.
Okay. You have a question? You have a time for one more question? I got like four emails on this question, so I have to ask so people can hear this. Basically, you know, we hear about the arguments about migration, you know, the Bering Strait theory and so on, and then a lot of the natives will say it comes from South America, the migration. What is your scientific, you know, just your research, like, what is the oldest, I guess, DNA? Is it from the north, the northern migration? Is it from the south? Do you have a educational guess, or I mean, just in your research?
Yeah.
I should say.
Yeah. So I think we feel very certain that there was a large mm-hmm. migration about 2,000 years ago that came from South America into the Caribbean and makes it all the way to the Greater Antilles, to Borinquen,
right.
Quisqueya, Hispaniola, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Bahamas. That's just in the last 2,000 years, and that's the one we associate with the Arawakan speakers and the people we call
right.
Taino. However, you're absolutely right. There were people there before in some of the islands, like Cuba, Hispaniola, and maybe even Puerto Rico. They were there 5,000 or even 6,000 years ago. So they've been there for a while before you
the
get
archaics.
The migration. The archaics, exactly. And some people say the archaic kind of almost completely disappeared when the Taino came. And other people say they mixed a little bit, but Taino really replaced the archaics that were there for the most part. The archaic may have been low numbers. The Taino were more advanced. They had ceramics. They had agriculture. They could do more. Where the archaic came from is still a mystery, I got to admit. So these two papers that came out, one of them says South America. One of them says most likely South America, but it could be
wow.
it could be Mesoamerica, it could be Yucatan. Nobody says Florida, so we've never seen a connection to Florida, unfortunately. Because some people say,
wow.
you can go from Florida to Cuba or Florida to Bahamas pretty easily. However, we've never seen that connection between Florida and the Caribbean. But I think there's more and more evidence that there may have been some connection to the Yucatan and Central America. But I think the more concrete connection, the connection with the Taino and most likely other migrations, show a stronger connection to South America. But I think we need to do a little more research and find out. There is something in like that haplogroup I mentioned, A to Z, with a Z at the end. That one doesn't show up in South America. And that one has been in the islands. It could be there longer than Taino. It's been there maybe 3,000 or 4,000 years. We don't know where it came from. It could be
really.
It could possibly be Yucatan in Central America. We need to do a little research to find out.
Wow, that's amazing that we can even ask that question, right?
Right.
I think this is exciting. This is the kind of science always, you know, answers some questions, but then you get new ones, and you start to go back and do some more research and try to answer those, and then you get new ones come up, and that's the beauty of science, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm so sorry, I forgot one question. There is a dilemma. There's a lot of people that downloaded their jet match, and they got a lot of matches from North America. So I know personally four people who actually went to those tribes and say, hey, I came out with Ojibwe, or I came out with Lakota, you know, and then the theory is that those tribes were brought to the island as slaves. In your research, have you found haplogroups that are more recent that came as slaves? Because I know in Yoruba, Pequots were brought over as slaves, and they still remember that. You know, they still remember that. Did you encounter that in the Puerto Rico and in the Caribbean, those haplogroups?
You know, it's possible. In every island, we found a few samples that don't have a strong prehistoric connection. So we try to estimate how long something has been on the island. Like C1B, we know it's been there for a while. A2Z, like I mentioned, that's A2K. They've been there for a while. We can estimate
right.
it because we see a lot of them, and we see even variation between them, a little bit of difference in the A2Zs and a little difference in the C1Bs and stuff like that. However, once in a while, you get one that's like a loner, one that like shows up by itself and doesn't have any relatives. That means that it came in the last, you know, couple hundred years maybe, because it's usually like a rare one, a minority one, but those show up. And if they're getting matched to groups in North America, it mm-hmm. could be that. I don't see it that
right.
much in Puerto Rico, but I think I think in Dominican Republic, Hispaniola, you might see it more because that was sort of a hub. I know Spanish had a capital right there in Santo Domingo. Cuba is much bigger island, and they did a lot of agriculture there in Cuba, so they might be able to bring people. And certainly in Jamaica, we know people were being taken out and bought in a lot. The British did that a lot. So it almost matters who was the colonial power, whether Spain or Britain, because they had sort of different ways. I think Britain did this a lot, so it's probably more common to see this in maybe like Jamaica or the Bahamas or some of the other English speaking countries. Whereas in Hispaniola, Cuba, and Puerto Rico, the Spanish they pretty much kept to themselves. They weren't mixing that much with the United States, and they weren't mixing too much with the British. They were enemies to the British. So you might be looking for clues in history by who was colonizing who at what point and how they could have come like that way. So that's an interesting question.
Oh, yeah. It was proposed to me. I almost forgot about that. So many people are using jet match, and they get overwhelmed when they see these northern tribes in their mm-hmm. profile. And they're like, wait a minute, wait, I'm not Taino, I'm Lakota, you know, and they look at these results as like, they, you know, it could be scary too, you know, so, wow, what a show, I can't believe this. What do you think, Stephanie? You got any final questions?
I do, actually, I have one more question for you, Dr. Villar.
Yeah.
What's next? What is next for you? Are you working on anything upcoming? Anything anthropologically interesting, anything as far as DNA continuing, anything with Taino DNA?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm working with a team doing doing specific work in the Bahamas, because that was sort of a part of the world that was colonized last, the part of the Caribbean that was colonized last, and it was emptied also, completely emptied. And so people today in the Bahamas don't really carry much Taino or Lucayan. It would be Lucayan DNA. I'm working with a group there. I'm trying to reconnect with groups in Cuba, because I think in Cuba there is so much to learn in that amazing country there, Cuba. And I'm trying to, one thing that might excite the listeners is I've been trying to promote and do more work, not just in the Spanish-speaking Caribbean, but also in the English-speaking Caribbean and other parts of Central and South America, to bring DNA testing to those countries, because in those countries, it's not that common to be able to do it. If you're living in Puerto Rico, you could sometimes, you know, get a kit from the United States, but it's much more difficult in many other countries. And I've partnered with groups in Mexico. Maybe we could bring DNA testing to a lab, find the right lab in Mexico, bring it to Mexico, find a partner in South America that could do this, in Peru, tal vez. In Peru, maybe. I jumped to Spanish there. And Peru, maybe, or Chile, Argentina, there may be a country that could begin doing their own testing. I think right now it's pretty much dominated by American companies and then European companies. But
absolutely,
we can sort of bring the power and bring the resources to other countries, this could really be something exciting. So I'm, as a Spanish speaker, I've been trying to do this more in Latin America, and so that's one thing I want to do, is sort of bring the field of genetic anthropology to other parts of the world, to have it be there and led by these countries, and not necessarily led by the United States or by Europe.
Wow.
That is amazing.
That's great work on your part doing that. keeping that momentum going, right?
Absolutely.
You know, if Yare was here, which she is here in spirit, she will say this to you, Dr. Villar, that she was very, she always used to tell me this, she was very grateful for your presence, you know, through Natural Geographic, to do this in Nahuake, because it just confirmed what she was trying to teach, empower people, I should
right.
say, of their indigenous heritage. And I remember meeting people through the different communities, and they used to talk about that study. You know, they will talk about it, and they were very proud, you know, very, very, very proud. And wow. And that was before I think I already took my test with 23andMe. So I kind of shared their excitement, like, wow, you get the results, you know, and you actually see
right.
those, like, wow, I got indigenous, you know. So I know you made a major impact in Awake, and that I know she was very grateful for that. My God, that's why. I think wherever she is right now listening, she's so happy you're on the air with us, you know, sharing this. So,
well, I,
yeah, tell
I
me.
Consider her a great friend. She was a great friend to me, and it was a mm-hmm. pleasure to work with her. And I was so excited that this was received so well in Puerto Rico and in other
yeah.
places as well, and it continues to be. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely, man. That's one thing I miss. Not, you know, arguing with her about DNA. Like, wait a minute. He always raised questions. So, listen, you were so grateful with your time. We're almost at the 90-minute mark. Can you believe it? 8 more minutes. We're at 90 minutes. And it feels like we just started, right? So
that it does.
You know, we're going to invite you back. And if you're, you know, we can do a Zoom. We'll talk about those studies that you've done, you know, and, you know, we'll be in touch with that, okay? And
that will be
mm-hmm.
my pleasure. Like I said, I've started working in a few other places that we may be able to share some data from Lucayan DNA and maybe even some work in Cuba. And if other communities in Jamaica, for example, I think I'd like to connect with some people there. I think in
mm-hmm.
Haiti, this is a project that could happen. So I'm always looking for to expand and make connections and help people learn about their ancestry through DNA.
That's
amazing.
I actually might be able to assist you if you need connections in Haiti. You can always reach out to me and we can try and work something out for you.
That's great.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Stephanie. Then we'll communicate by email after this. That's exciting. Thank you.
Of course.
This is great. Well, Stephanie, Dr. Villar, I hate to say this, but this show, it's a wrap. The DNA show with Dr. Miguel Villar is history. You can always archive. These shows are always archived here in Taino Radio, Nahuake Radio. And you could, listen. Please share it with all your family and friends, all your groups out there, Taino groups. This was a great show. We got to get you back, Dr. Villar.
Absolutely.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'd like to come back and share more information and share with your audience some more. It was fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us today, Dr. Villar.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I want to end the show. Back in 1992, when the Caribbean was celebrating 500 years of the discovery of the so-called discovery of the Americas, Christopher Columbus, there were huge celebrations. And there was one singer, Jose Juan Luis Guerra, he refused to celebrate the 500 years of discovery. So he wrote an album about the ancestors, the Taino, the First Nation people. And this song is called Daka Naboria Maya Ni Makana. And he reflects about the mountains, the rivers, the spirit of the island, which is indigenous. So Yare, wherever you are, Edwin Cedeño, you are all ancestors now, and you're helping us unify all those clans that were lost, but now we're together. Thank you all.
Gonna